Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to FirstGroup plc Q3 trading update. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you the conference is being recorded today, Wednesday, the 21st of January, 2015. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Chris Church. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Jenny. Good morning, and thank you for joining the FirstGroup third quarter trading update, covering the 3 months to the 31st of December last year. I'm joined today by Nick Jeavis and Faisal Tabbah. As usual, I will summarize the trading performance in the quarter, and I will then be happy to take any questions that you may have. Overall trading for the group is in line with our expectations for the period. Our transformation plans continue to make good progress. In summary, the impact of the lower demand in Greyhound due to the rapid and significant drop in consumer fuel prices is offset by rail and transit performing at the top end of our expectations, together with student and bus showing improving financial performance driven by our recovery plans. If we turn now to each of the divisions in more detail. Firstly, student. Our financial performance has now started to benefit from the improved pricing we achieved on approximately one-third of our portfolio awarded during the 2014 bid season. As you know, we increased pricing by approximately 4.5% on contracts due for renewal in order to reduce the proportion of low-margin contracts in the portfolio and increase returns. Despite the price increase, we maintained our contract retention at a slightly higher level than the previous year. We therefore continue to expect our bus portfolio at the end of this year to be broadly similar to last, with revenues around the top end of our original planning range, which you will recall was flat to -5% compared with the previous year. When we entered the 2014 bid season, as you know, we were prepared for more contracts not to be renewed. This would have led clearly to a smaller business, but the short-term cash impact of this would have been more than offset by cascading the freed-up buses. This is the same philosophy as we enter the 2015 bidding season, when another one-third of our original contract base will be up for bid. It's too early at this stage to say where the balance of pricing and contract retention will end up, but we will maintain our approach of only winning or retaining business at prices that give us an appropriate return. The second major aspect of the student recovery plan is cost, and following the progress made in the first half, we are continuing to grind out the efficiencies. This comes from the adoption of more consistent best practice procedures across the portfolio of over 500 locations, as well as the continued focus on overhead savings. We continue to expect approximately $20 million for 2014-15 as we work towards the next $50 million of cost savings that we have previously announced. I remind you that cost inflation continues to run slightly ahead of price indexation on the two-thirds of the contracts yet to be rebid. So clearly maintaining momentum on cost efficiencies is important. On fuel, our customer contracts are either passed through or we are effectively hedged. So the recent significant drops have had limited impact on this business. Taking all of this together, as we said at the half, we still expect to achieve an operating margin in excess of 7.5%. Our medium-term target remains double-digit margins. To help you as you start to think ahead to 15-16, you know this business is impacted by the number of school operating days. In the current year, although there was an impact between each half, there is no impact on the full year. In 15-16, due to the timing of Easter and also Labor Day, there will be an impact. The absolute amount will depend on the size of the business following the bid season, but assuming similar levels as today, the margin impact of this will be approximately 0.5%. Clearly, this is only a timing issue, and this impact reverses in 16-17. Turning now to Transit, our capital light business, and it continues to perform well. You remember that we expected the second half revenue to slow compared with the first due to a couple of big contract roll-offs and fewer new startups during the period. What we have been pleased with in the third quarter is the rate of organic growth coming through, i.e. the additional services under existing contracts. And this has been better than we were expecting, such that we have increased our expectations for the full year revenue growth to now be approximately 6% compared with the 4% that we guided last time. We still expect full year margins to be around our medium-term target of 7%, which of course is very attractive in the context of the modest capital required in this business. On fuel, the vast majority of the contracts have pass-through clauses, so there is no impact. We are, however, monitoring the situation with our shuttle business in the oil sands in Canada. To date, there has been little impact, but of course there is a potential risk. Turning now to Greyhound. Although our smallest business, there has been an impact due to the demand for its services being affected by the significant and rapid fall in the price of consumer gasoline. Pump prices are down by an average of 35% across the US since the end of September. This reduction makes a meaningful difference to the affordability for our customers of using a car rather than traveling by Greyhound. Greyhound revenues fell 1.1% on a like-for-like basis in the quarter. Greyhound Express, although impacted by lower demand, still delivered a 2.1% like-for-like revenue growth in the period. On fuel costs, we are effectively fully hedged in the near term, and for 15-16, we are approximately 50% hedged. Through targeted mileage reductions and changes to our fare structures, we are maintaining price competitiveness and mitigating the impact of the demand fall on our profitability. However, the severity and speed of the fall in pump prices does mean our responses won't fully offset the impact in the current financial year. As a result, we expect full-year margins to be modestly below last year's margin on essentially flat revenues. Looking out into the future, as you know, we are in the process of extending the airline-style yield management, real-time pricing, and customer relationship systems we use in our point-to-point brands across the rest of our unique nationwide network. This will give traditional Greyhound the tools it needs to stimulate and manage passenger demand better than it does today. This was one of the key factors that helped the Express performance that I just referred to being delivering better growth compared with the traditional network. Our medium-term target of 12% margins for Greyhound is unchanged, although the timing of achieving this will depend upon future oil price fluctuations. In UK Bus, this business is on track with our plans. We continue to deliver volume growth in the quarter with overall passenger growth, volume growth of 1.4% and commercial volumes higher at 2.8%, offsetting lower concession volumes. Having starting to reach the anniversaries of the fare rebasing actions that we have taken, in some of our operations we have begun to put through inflation-based increases. As a result, we delivered positive yield for the first time since the transformation plan started, with like-for-like revenue growth of 2.7%. On fuel, we are fully hedged in the near term, and therefore there is no impact. And overall, we are in line with our expectations for growth and margin improvements for the year. There is still much to do, but we remain confident of achieving our medium-term target of double-digit margins. Our rail operations continue to perform well with strong volume growth and good financial performance. Revenues in the third quarter increased by 7.3%, and this was towards the top end of our expectations. On franchising, the main update since the half year was the announcement of the result of the East Coast competition, which we were obviously disappointed not to win. Clearly, there remain a lot of franchise competition still to come, and our medium-term targets remain unchanged. You will remember we are currently contracted to run TPE through to March 2015, and we are currently negotiating a direct award with the DfT to extend this to February 2016. As you know, we are also in discussions with the DfT concerning the longer-term direct award to at least March 2019 for First Great Western. On cash, there is no change to our previous guidance of a cash flow of £100 million for the full year, driven mainly by the working capital outflow at the end of the first Capital Connect contract franchise. So in summary, the impact of the lower demand in Greyhound due to the rapid and significant drop in consumer fuel prices is offset by rail and transit performing at the top end of our expectations, together with student and bus showing improving financial performance driven by our transformation plans. We therefore remain on track to deliver our expectations for the year. I would now like to hand back to Jenny so we can take any questions you may have.
Thank you very much indeed, sir. And as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. Your first question from Morgan Stanley comes from the line of Annelies Vermeulen. Your line is now open.
Good morning. Thank you for the update. I have a couple of questions. Firstly, on the transit business, you said that there's been some new business coming in, which has offset some of these larger contracts rolling off. And I'm just curious as to what's driving that organic growth, if there's a shift that you've seen. As I recall at the half year, you said that you didn't expect there to be sufficient new business to offset that, so I'm curious as to what's changed. Secondly, more generally, I suppose, on Greyhound, slightly lower volumes driven by switching back to car from lower fuel, I'm just wondering if you've seen any read across from the lower fuel for the UK businesses, just anecdotally. And then lastly, on the TransPennine bid, given the sort of the lack of contracts won in 2014, whether that will change your approach into how you bid for TransPennine. Thank you.
Morning, Annelies. Thank you very much. Scribbling rapidly. First of all, on transit, as I said in the script, what we expected at the half was 4% growth, and that was on the back of there were two larger contracts that we'd lost in the first half. We've been winning contracts in the second half, but just the timing of that meant that it wouldn't be offset. What's changed, and it comes down to individual regions, individual contracts, it's the people that we have the contracts with are just saying, right, they would like us to do extra services for particular events that they're doing or to increase the scheduled runs on particular contracts. So there's no one specific thing. It's across a whole range of the business, and obviously we've been pleased with that.
Okay.
In terms of Greyhound, the simple answer to your question is no. There is we've seen no read across. First of all, fuel is and car ridership is obviously a significantly bigger impact in the U.S. than over here. Fuel costs are certainly lower in as a percentage in the UK businesses than in the US. So no, we've certainly not seen that over here, and I wouldn't particularly expect to.
Mm-hmm.
And on TPE, I think there's two elements to that. First of all, we're discussing the extension, so a direct award on that. Mm-hmm. But I think your question really goes to the wider point of our bidding philosophy.
Mm.
Which is clearly we were disappointed with what has happened so far, But our approach of maintaining disciplined procedures, we want to make sure that we achieve the right returns, etc., that will remain unchanged. What will change, though, as we always do when we get feedback from any bid, is look at how we can do things better. And as always, in anything you do, you can do things better. So we're looking at that. But the basic philosophy of making sure that we maintain our disciplined bidding will remain unchanged.
Okay. Thank you. And just one other question, if I may, which I forgot to mention. Given the recent FX moves that we've seen, can I just ask what your currency assumptions are for the full year, where that's coming out at?
Yeah, the overall, first of all, on exchange, I just remind you and everybody that our exchange impact at the EPS level, we're essentially, there's no impact because the translation of the US dollar earnings is offset by the translation impact on dollar interest charges and also all fuel costs, whether it be in the UK or in the US, are in dollars.
I mean, we forecast the rest of the year out at 155. As you know, our profits are quite lumpy in the way in which they accrue, so the rates change quite a lot. But if you projected a 155 rate into next year, there'd be very little exchange difference because of the way the profits have come through. Most of the student profits are in the latter half at the lower rate. So we don't see a big FX effect going into next year.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you.
Thanks, Annalise.
Thank you very much. Now from Lazarus, your next question comes from the line of Edward Stanford. Your line is now open, sir.
Good morning, everybody. Two questions, if I may, please. One, just going into Greyhound and the issue of car competitiveness. You alluded to the fact that Greyhound Express has been helped by yield management, but at a fundamental level, is there any difference between the traditional business and Greyhound Express in terms of the impact of the car on demand for those services? And secondly, you talk about putting through fare increases in the UK bus in line with inflation. Have you noticed any issues with that, given that there's obviously we are in a lower fuel price environment, and while that's not the majority of your costs in perception terms from your customers, that might be an issue in any of those fare increases sticking? So what's your experience so far? Thank you.
Morning, Edward. Thank you very much. Yeah, first of all, on Express versus the rest of the network, Express tends to be the shorter trips. It is essentially the major difference. We've also, clearly, as we put Express in and as we've said before, that is effectively more yield managed, that we've moved further along the process in the yield management implementation Express, and therefore, as you would expect, there would be less of an impact. But it's mainly the distance is the key difference. In terms of UK inflation, what we've seen so far, and we're about around 40% of the way through the implementation of the yield management that we expect for this year, that inflation at sort of normal levels are stuck. And that's why we've seen the positive yield coming through in the quarter. And again, our expectations are for that to continue. And the key aspect, as I mentioned, is the fact that the volumes are continuing strongly at the same time as those yields being in place.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Now from RBC, you have a question from the line of Damien Brewer. Your line is open, sir.
Good morning, everybody. Two questions for me, please. First of all, fuel. On UK bus, when you last reported, I think you were 58% hedged for 15-16. I'm just wondering if there's been any change there, and if not, that would imply at least potential all other things equal. There's a not immaterial help on your cost base with that. If that is the case, how are you thinking about that potential sort of helping cost? Are you thinking basically that that fares could be held lower for longer or used to offset other inflation or the threat of a further loss of BSOG after the election. I'm just interested to hear about how you're thinking about how you might use that fuel benefit. And then secondly, could you share with us your thinking on the rail side? I recall historically that relatively high levels of CPI and RPI were helpful to the rail business. So just wondering what you think the impact of a more low inflation environment could be vis-a-vis the obviously still strong demand in the business.
Okay, thanks, Damien.
I mean, on the fuel hedge, Damien, we've been, for 15-16, we've been largely hedged for 15-16 for a while. So, but we do get some benefit going into 15-16, and when we estimate the fuel benefit going into 15-16 for UK bus, around about $9 million, so it's about £6 million going into 15-16. Because we're about, on UK bus, we're about 90% hedged at the equivalent price of about $115 for a diesel, $115 for diesel, which is the equivalent of upper 90s there. Where you get to with the UK, fuel for 16-17, we're about 34% hedged, so you'll start to see a bigger impact in 16-17.
Okay.
I think in terms of the other aspects of your question on that, Damien, I think, first of all, BSOG, and that's still under review, but as we've said previously, and I don't think there's any change to this, is the review is looking more about how it's distributed and the basis of the distribution rather than a change in the quantum. So at the moment, that isn't something that we are saying, oh, yeah, that's a major change, and because we don't see that. I mean, there are clearly different inflationary factors. At the moment, we're seeing inflation in terms of wage rises and so on in the norm. There are other areas around, but in terms of those numbers that Nick's just seen, it doesn't make a significant difference to us going forward, so therefore I wouldn't see a major change in our policy.
Can I just correct that 16-17 number, so I gave you the wrong number. It's 49% hedged at $91 we are for 16-17 at the moment, sorry.
For the UK bus, just to be clear?
Yeah, for UK bus.
Okay, and then the following year is 34% hedged.
No, the following 16-17 is 49%, and 17-18 is only 6% hedged now. So the 34 was the previous number.
Okay, got it.
Obviously, if oil prices stay where they are, the impact of what you suggest increases. But again, I think you can look at all sorts of different analyst reports of where oil prices are going to go in the future.
Yeah, I mean, we looked at the Fuel Administration out of the US. I mean, they were predicting, not many people have reported since Christmas, but they were predicting sort of $55 for next year and then 70-something for 16-17. So, and the forward rates have only just started to come down, have they? So up until December, the forward rates for 16-17 were still up in the sort of the $90 and 17-18 at the $90. They have now just tipped down into 70, and I think yesterday they went into upper 60s. So there's a lot of volatility still in the fuel price to see where it's going to land.
Okay, interesting. And then on the rail and inflation, is low inflation good or bad for you, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I think that obviously the vast majority of it is regulated fares, so it's essentially just pass-through in terms of the price increases that gets built into the individual bids. So overall, the bigger impact comes from, do we see a continuation of passenger volume growth, which we've now seen, not only us, but obviously the other players as well, for quite a number of years, and again in this period, good volume growth, and we see that going forward. So I think that is a far bigger issue than, or far bigger benefit, than the actual total amount of...
I mean, a lot of the core inflationary facts on rail flow through the mechanism.
Measure, anyway.
So it affects the subsidy and premium, except it's reflected in the track access charges. And obviously keeping fares down helps affordability for the passengers. I guess the only thing is, as long as you get wage restraint and you don't get wage restraint going the other way. But of course, in rail, it's really those big charges which are covered by the mechanisms of pass-through on inflation.
Okay, perfect. And can I ask just one cheeky final one? Great Western, are you still on track for potential news in March? And if I can be very, very cheeky, 2019 is an extension. That doesn't sound long enough given all the infrastructure disruption on the Great Western Main Line. Would that be a starting point, or is there anything more you can share on that at this point?
Well, I don't think it's a cheeky question at all. We're in discussions with the DfT on the extension. Again, I think we've said before that it won't be before March because under the government rules, they have to leave 12 months from the PIN notice, so that's March. And those discussions are ongoing. I think the government's already announced that March 19 is the date with a potential extension of 13 periods or 1 year that takes us out through past the major element of the investment program, the $7.5 billion. So those negotiations are ongoing.
It's perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers, Damon.
Thank you very much indeed. Now from Jefferies, you have a question from the line of Joe Spooner. Your line is now open, sir.
Morning, guys. If I can just return back to the UK bus business, I'm not sure you addressed it in the previous answer, but obviously you're now cycling through with fare increases. But as I think Damien it was who said, you know, clearly the pump price for fuel has come down. Why don't you see that as a risk in the UK business in the same way it's clearly playing through in Greyhound? And then further on Greyhound, you know, obviously the hedging that you're stuck with currently comes off, but you're still talking about 12% at the target margin. Presumably, implicitly, you're saying all of those fuel benefits you expect to pass through to the passenger.
Okay, I think, first of all, in bus, on usage and fuel costs, I think when you look at a good proportion of our networks and so on are in city areas, and therefore you have the impact of congestion and so on, which has people traveling on our buses. What you have in Greyhound in the US is people traveling by car for greater distances. And if you're traveling, again, we're looking at obviously the fuel impact in each of the different aspects of the Greyhound business, but a significant impact is in the 250 to 1,000 mile different distance, where it becomes then more economical for several people to get in a car and drive those distances rather than get on a Greyhound bus. And that's been one of the main drivers of the footfall in demand. Obviously, we don't have those distances and you have more congestion in the city areas over here on UK bus, which is why there's a difference between the two environments, between the two businesses. In terms of Greyhound, yeah, clearly the lower demand has an impact, as we've said, on our margins and on the base business. And what we've done is we've taken actions to offset that impact at a contribution margin level, and we will achieve that. But clearly, if you have a smaller business, spreading that across your overheads has an impact on the net margin, which is why when I was speaking, I said we will get to the 12%, and the major step up in that comes from the implementation of the yield management systems. But if oil prices stay where they are, there could be an impact on the timing of that, i.e. we'll get there, but we will get there later. At this stage, and given, I mean, fuel prices fell by 12% in December, they've been moving around over the last couple of days, so I don't want to be calling what fuel prices will be in a year's time at the moment, and that's why I caveated we will get to 12%, but clearly a timing will be an issue if oil prices stay where they are at the moment, very low, because that obviously has an impact on our demand.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay. Cheers, Joe.
Thank you very much. Now from Liberum, you have a question from the line of Gerald Koo. Your line is open, sir.
Morning, all. A few questions for me. Starting in UK bus, how sustainable do you think the current volume growth rate is, or do you think we should expect some fading of that rate as you sort of go up against tougher comparatives? And how does that growth rate vary geographically? Secondly, is there any feedback on the East Coast bids from the DfT that you could share with us? And finally, on students, what impact do you think lower fuel prices are going to have on bidding strategies, perhaps more for, in the case of your competitors, who may not be as well hedged on fuel as you are?
Just bear with me, Gerald. I'm trying to capture those, make sure I don't forget them. I'm sure you'll tell me if I don't. The 2.8% commercial passenger growth during the quarter, we've now had 19 consecutive months of volume growth, which I have to say is unprecedented in First's history. It's not surprising given the actions that we've been taking, but we believe that will continue for a while. Is it certain? Absolutely not. We are in unprecedented territory, and certainly when you compare those growth numbers compared with some of our competitors, they are obviously very favorable. But given the degree of change that we've been putting through this business with the change in the fare structures, the investment in new buses, and the change in all the procedures that run behind that to make sure that we are delivering reasonable punctuality, that the buses are turning up on time, and obviously we're reducing the amount of breakdowns and so on, those have all continued to improve and still have a way to continue to improve, so we're continuing to invest in the new buses and so on. So there is no reason why it shouldn't continue for a good while yet, but I do emphasize we are in unprecedented territory. In terms of the geographical split, it does vary across the whole country. Again, it depends upon where we started from in each of the regions. And again, our philosophy and our approach is very much to do the right thing in the individual regions rather than controlling everything from either here in London or from Aberdeen. And therefore, it does vary. You get some regions are going forward very well, the ones we've talked about before, the likes of Bristol, Manchester, and so on. The areas that we've seen in the past as having more difficulty, partly driven by the economic environment, such as particularly in Scotland, are finding it more difficult. So there is a whole range, which is why we are pleased with the netting of all of those coming out as a positive 2.8%. In terms of feedback on East Coast, the key difference was just one of price. And I'm not commenting on the other bids. I'm just saying it was at a price that, under our modelling, that we did not believe that we would earn the required return. And it is as simple as that on East Coast. And on student, in terms of fuel prices, again, when we go through, for what we have at the moment, that's we're effectively hedged on the current contracts. As we bid new contracts, we will take account of fuel prices and then hedge those in. But my understanding is Durham are clearly the number two player in the market, has a very similar hedging strategy to us, so I don't see a major impact on that. There may be some of the mom and pops who don't hedge who will be in a better position, but I wouldn't see that as a major impact, Nick.
Yeah, no, you're right, Chris. From a renewal point of view, Gerald, if you think about it, we're around about 90% hedged on our student business for next year, and you've got about 30% of the market which is up for renewal, but it's only up for renewal from September, so it's only about two-thirds of that, so it's about 20% of our fuel is up for renewal. 10% is unhedged. So there's a 10% bit that we do have hedged, but of that 30%, some of those contracts will get rolled over without going to bid. So we don't see it as a particular issue. We will bid the market curve, and you know, the delta on that might be 1 or 2 million, but we're quite comfortable with where we are on that.
Right. Okay, thanks very much.
Did we cover all your questions, Daryl?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Now from Deutsche Bank, your next question comes from the line of Anandate. Your line is open, sir.
Hello, morning, everyone. I had three questions, please, as well. Just on transit, I know you've spoken about these big contracts falling out, and we knew about that, and that you've won some new business. But on that basis, is there any indication you can give of what you think next year's growth number might be? I'm just trying to figure out what the base will be from this year going into next year. And on UK bus, clearly political risk is all over the place. I was just wondering what your view is on what would be the best outcome for the regional bus operators, and then maybe what you think the most likely outcome is as well. And then finally, just on First Student, there's a body of evidence suggesting US labor market might be getting a bit tighter. I was just wondering whether that's something you're seeing with your drivers.
Okay, morning, Anna. Thanks very much. In terms of the fall off, and again, just to remind you that the two larger contracts that we lost earlier in the year, one of them was a reasonable margin, the other one wasn't a very good margin at all. So although it impacted the growth rate, there was less of an impact on the margin. And the reason I say that is just because of the timing of it, there will continue to be some impact of that flowing into next year. That's the first point. The second point is our pipeline for new contract wins we're bidding on at the moment. That includes a whole range of contracts from larger ones to some smaller ones. Is good. Our pipeline remains good. So obviously, in part, the revenue growth will depend upon our success rate on those new contracts. But if I exclude those, I'd still see us in positive territory going forwards, but in low single digits. But it is subject to what happens on that pipeline and winning those bids. In terms of the political risk within UK bus, as you know, the government has given power to the nine city regions effectively for devolution. Manchester is probably furthest ahead, albeit they would need to still go through the changes in the law to allow them to elect a mayor, the election of a mayor, and then if there is going to be a change in the impact on how the bus networks run, that would take time to come through. So the first thing is, if anything happens, certainly it would take time to come through. The best outcome, and this is not only our view but the other operators' view, is that we believe very strongly that the best way to go forward is in partnership between the bus operators and the local authorities. Under whatever measure you're looking for, whether it's making sure that it's growth, bus services, value for money, and so on, our strong belief is that that is the best outcome. And again, when you see some of the rhetoric in the newspapers and people wanting to go towards a London style of model, we, as well as the other operators, point out that the London style model is more expensive, both for the government in terms of the subsidies that are given per bus passenger. It's something like £75 a passenger in London, £19 in the rest of the country. But also in terms of the fares as well. Fares are significantly higher for passengers in London than they are in the rest of the country. In terms of most likely, that's an impossible one to answer, I'm afraid. I would say we are confident that we will get the message out on the logic, which is, as I've just explained, that the current partnership model is the best model. I hope that will prevail. But as you say, it's politics involved. In terms of student labour market tightening, I think there's two aspects to that that people often ask us. First of all, in terms of getting drivers, in certain areas of our empire, yes, it has got more difficult, and driver shortages in a small number of regions has been has impacted us this year, but we're addressing that. So I don't see it as a major issue as we go forwards. In terms of wage rates, I know, for example, the trucking industry and so on have seen quite significant labour inflation. We're not seeing that, but the labour pool is different to that trucking market because, obviously, we're looking for part-time labour. It's just a different pool, and we're not seeing any increase in pressures on our wages. And again, because we often get asked this question, I remind you that there is no collective bargaining across the whole of the US. They're all local agreements. So hopefully that addresses your question.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Now from HSBC, your next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas. Your line is open.
Morning. Three, please. One, similar to the last one that you just answered, but with respect to UK bus, can you just give us a sense of what's going on with wage rates in the UK now that we seem to be hitting higher levels of employment? The second thing, back to the East Coast, can you just frame perhaps your bidding strategy in terms of what you're able to do with your balance sheet and your credit rating and to what extent that restricts your ability? I appreciate that to put in aggressive bids. I appreciate that you think you wouldn't have made adequate returns on the winning bid, but I wonder whether you would have been able to get up to that level anyway, given the position that the balance sheet is in. And then finally, in US school bus, could you just remind us where you are in terms of lost days versus last year and what your guidance depends on for this year?
Okay. So in terms of US bus wage rates, we're not seeing anything out of the normal.
UK bus.
Yeah, I was talking about UK bus. My brain and mouth disengaged. UK bus, yeah. So we're not seeing anything out of the normal. We're not seeing any particularly significant increase in pressure. A little bit, but not significant. Probably the best way I can answer that, Joe, is what we have built into our forecasts, it's in line. And I'm not going to give you the number because that clearly doesn't help my discussions. But I don't see a significant impact there. It's creeping up, but to not a great extent. In terms of East Coast, the main way we think about this is, are we going to get an adequate return? And we put together the bid that would give us an adequate return. At no stage in that process did we say, right, the balance sheet or the credit rating was holding us back from what we wanted to do. And I think it would be just wrong of me to imply that when we're bidding that we were being restricted by the credit rating. It was more about what can we do with that franchise and for that matter, any other ones we bid on. And therefore get the right return. It wasn't, oh, we're limited because this will impact our credit rating. So it didn't restrict us. In terms of school bus days, for 14-15, there is no impact on operating days year on year. There was an impact between first half and second half, as we previously talked about, but no impact for the full year. In terms of specifically your question as to what do we need to get to the end of the year, Obviously, we need to run the business efficiently, which is just like we would normally do. The only thing, I think, in terms of operating days that would change it significantly is if the weather was significantly worse than a normal weather season.
But at the moment, we're in line with weather.
We're bang in line at the moment, year to date.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much indeed. And before we take the final question, just a reminder, it's star one on your telephone keypad if you wish to ask a question. And from RBS, your next question comes from the line of Toby Hunston. Your line is now open.
Hi there, good morning. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. Firstly, you alluded to it just then, but if you could give us an update on your current thinking on the ratings, whether commitment to investment grade is still very much in place, and what measures you might consider if that does come in under pressure. And then secondly, I was just wondering whether you've considered doing any more active reduction of debt servicing costs, considering the coupons are pretty high on quite a lot of the bonds, especially the shorter dated bonds. So any colour on that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Morning, Toby. First of all, just an update on investment grade. Fitch came out on the 1st of December, I think it was, and confirmed that our credit rating was unchanged. And S&P came out a little bit earlier than that. So they were before East Coast was announced. But they've always been very clear in their model that they do not assume any new rail wins, and therefore East Coast, by logic, meant that they wouldn't change that. So where we are at the moment is that our plans to turn around the bus businesses is the key driver to the future. We obviously have regular meetings with the rating agencies. They have those models. They prepare their own models. And so I would not see any reason to change the rating. And obviously these results are in line. In terms of what actions would we take, the key actions that we're focused on is turning around the business that we've said. And that's what our focus is on, and we believe that that will maintain our credit rating. It is important to us, not least that bond costs increase is the main impact. And as we've said previously, if we were downgraded, that would cost us around £20 million in increased interest costs. There is a technical requirement on rail bidding to have investment grade status, but there are four tests, one of which is investment grade, and you need to pass three of the four tests. The other three tests we pass very, very easily. So again, there would not be an impact on rail bidding if we did get downgraded, but as I say, we don't expect to. In terms of the interest cost, you're absolutely right. Of the 140 million or so of interest, of which about 120 is cash costs, the rest being notional interest unwinds. The vast majority of that relates to bond costs, but if we were to reduce those bonds, buy them back, tender them in the market, effectively you just end up paying the interest costs early. And although we continue to monitor the situation, there is no logic for that. It doesn't gain us anything net present value. What has happened at the start of the year was that we negotiated the new revolving credit facility at good interest rates, and therefore, and this is now around the edges, some of the higher cost other debt we have, particularly on leases, et cetera, roll off, then we will use that facility more to keep the interest costs down.
Okay, thank you. Just one follow-up question. I think you'd used perhaps slightly different language around the credit rating in terms of whether it's important or kind of fully committed. So is it a full commitment at this point, or is it kind of just your view on what you're just confident the agencies have no reason to downgrade?
Yeah, I'm struggling to see the difference between the two. We're committed to investment grade status because it's important to us as a business. We believe we are an investment grade business, but we believe that we will maintain that through the actions that we're taking. So if I've implied there's a change in what I'm saying, then that's just my use of words. No, there's no change.
Okay, apologies for that. Thank you very much.
No, it's fine. I needed to clarify it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
Thank you very much indeed, sir. And as there are no further questions at this point, I shall hand the floor back to you.
Well, thank you very much for the questions, and I wish you all a good day. Thank you.
And with many thanks to our speakers today, that does conclude the conference. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.